Steam gauges safer than glass panels? How could this be? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Max Trescott, who is well known for not only his instruction in the San Jose, California area, but also for his publications, especially those which deal with glass panel equipment and the training for it. Max, thanks for taking some time out to join us today.
Yeah, hi, Paul. How you doing?
I am doing well, but I have to tell you, I thought of you in the last couple of days when this bit of news came across that the NTSB on March 9th released a report which found that among aircraft built between 2002 and 2006, and this is small piston-powered airplanes, those equipped with glass cockpits had a higher fatal accident rate than similar aircraft with conventional instruments. They were about on a par with accidents overall, but a higher fatality rate. And I immediately thought of you because I thought, wow, I've talked to Max in the past, and we've talked about all the additional situational awareness benefits and all the other things that glass panels bring to the table. What's going on here? I read farther down the NTSB report, and they credit the difference to training. A training gap for pilots who are transitioning from steam gauges to glass. And so I thought you would be the perfect guy to talk to come on and comment on this. First of all, what do you see in the data?
Yeah, I think they did a great study, by the way. I think their initial hypothesis, which was that perhaps glass cockpit equipped aircraft are safer than non-glass cockpit, was a good premise to be testing. That was their hypothesis. They concluded that they were not able to prove that their data didn't show that glass cockpit aircraft were any safer. In some areas, they showed them less safe. I think that their overall conclusion that five of their six recommendations are that pilots just need more training and the FAA needs to look at, perhaps some different regulations related to training. I think those are spot on. One of the NTSB members commented during the hearings, and I don't know that this is actually in the report itself, but I thought he made a really great comment. He said that both the airlines and military army helicopter studies went through the same kinds of transitions to glass, but he noted that while the airlines typically have much more comprehensive training than what we find in general aviation, that today's general aviation glass cockpits are often more capable than those found on the airliners. So I think they're concerned that there is a gap between the huge capability that we have in glass aircraft and the training that's out there that people are getting.
Well, we know that right out of the box, without any training or almost no training, maybe a brief look through the manual, there are a couple of big advantages that glass has. For example, the near extinction of accidents related to fuel exhaustion. What parts of the glass panel experience do you think are not transferring across quickly to new pilots transitioning from steam gauges?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Fuel accidents have just about disappeared with that. I think that the key thing, let me just explain one thing that the study really didn't answer. If you look at on the face of it, they said, oh gosh, when you compare accidents between glass and non-glass aircraft, in some cases the accident rate is higher. What they did agree to was that the way these glass-equipped aircraft are being used is very different from the way non-glass aircraft are being used that were built in exactly the same year. So, for example, glass-equipped aircraft on average were on trips of 96 miles when they had accidents, whereas non-glass aircraft were on trips of 25 miles when they had accidents. And so what they determined was that the non-glass aircraft are being used a lot more for training. So a lot of them had CFIs on board, whereas the glass aircraft were being used more for IFR, used for more for longer trips, were more likely to be involved with weather. So they actually concluded that it was impossible for them to determine whether the differences in accident rate were due to differences in cockpits or to the different ways that the aircraft were being used. And I think that's a very important thing for people to understand.
Okay, to me, there's an encouraging message underlying that, and that is that if we get people trained to be proficient with their glass, we may be able to make those more aggressive uses of aviation, general aviation, as safe as the historical baseline of putting around the patch.
That's a really good point. I think that if they were to have matched the different types of uses and compared them, they probably would have found that glass aircraft being used for the same kinds of mission as conventional aircraft would show a safety advantage. It's just the fact that they were used for, you know, longer, more dangerous, more complicated kind of things, the higher rate in some particular areas. So, yeah, I think there's definitely room for optimism here. And going back to what the board member said about the Army helicopters and airlines, you know, certainly they had transition problems, but with better training, they found that their rates decreased over time. And that's, by the way, has been shown in some of the different communities. For example, I recently read a great article about the accident rate among Cirruses. And when they first came out, they had a higher rate, but because of aggressive training programs from the factory and you know, different things like the COPA, the Cirrus Owner Pilots Group, you know, they've done great things in terms of bringing that accident rate down to where it's just the same as GA in general. So, you know, these things can be improved with work.
All right. Well, when we come back from the break, let's talk about the specifics of that, because obviously the thing that's left open now is how do we train to make these numbers come around right side up again. Max Trescott is my guest. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approaches. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott, talking about the NTSB study released March 9th that showed we need better training to make glass cockpit-equipped aircraft as safe as their steam gauge counterparts. And Max, the question we have to deal with now is, what specific kinds of training would be recommended to close this gap? And I think you're the perfect person to ask because you specialize in this sort of thing.
In fact, I was really happy the NTSB put on a 2.5-hour commercial for my services and products. I wish they'd I wish they'd mentioned me by name, but it did seem like an infomercial for getting better, for getting better training. One of the things that one of the members highlighted, and they were questioning staff on this, is that there is just a wide range and variety of training which is available from for glass cockpit type aircraft. Everything ranging from the high end, which is factory training, which people who are buying a brand new aircraft would typically do. But other people, but they usually don't choose to, you know, pay for it and go back to the factory. All the way down through, you know, different training software programs you can use to using CFIs at your local airport. And that's where you probably get the greatest variability at the lower end in terms of using CFIs available at your local airport. I fly from time to time with people in their glass-equipped aircraft, and they'll sometimes complain to me of having flown with other flight instructors who knew less about the equipment than they knew about it. So I think there's a big challenge both for CFIs to invest the time and energy that they need to come up to speed and be very familiar with this equipment, and for pilots to you know, do some thorough investigation to make sure that they're you know, getting the best return on investment for the different training that that they're doing. So generically speaking, I would say that people probably should try and get the best possible training that they can afford. If they can go afford to go to the factory and spend, you know, probably 3 days and probably $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 when they buy a glass aircraft that may be used and therefore didn't come with factory training, yeah, they should go and do that, because that's going to be among the best type of training they can get.
Okay, now here's a role maybe for SAFE or NAFI or somebody in the middle. The FAA is going to be resistant, I think, to actually codifying more stringent requirements for flight instructors in the areas of technically advanced aircraft. Is it appropriate to create some sort of accreditation or referral program for instructors who have gone the extra mile to become proficient in this technology?
I think you're right on the first point, which is, and also on your second question as well. I think the FAA is going to be extremely reluctant to put out a glass cockpit endorsement or to, as one board member requested, that pilots show proficiency in using during their initial training and during their recurrent training. Well, a lot of people don't have access to these systems, so of course you're not going to require that in primary training. And so what do you do? Yeah, I think that SAFE and NAFI and organizations like that probably could do a good job in terms of specifying for CFIs, what would a syllabus look like? What are the different ways that you can train and prepare yourself for that? At the high end of that, a number of CFIs have gone and gotten the factory training themselves and can give a training at the same level that you would find at the factory. So that's certainly the high end of what people can be looking for. There are also just lots of different ways to remain proficient with PC simulators that you can either buy from Garmin or from various third-party training manufacturers, books, all that kind of stuff. I think the key message is that we have more complex systems, and as a result, all pilots and all CFIs are just going to have to resolve themselves to spending more time to becoming familiar with these systems until we finally figure out how to make them more usable. And I think that's going to be a while. I don't think that's going to happen overnight.
The FAA requires now for private pilots, 3 hours of simulated IFR. Is it not reasonable to ask a private pilot candidate now to have 3 hours of at least simulator time on technically advanced aircraft, especially given the NTSB's suggestion that it be allowed on cockpit simulators other than those approved as FTDs?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that you're going to find some flight schools in remote parts of the country that just don't have much access or much knowledge among their staff about those kinds of things. So I personally would be reluctant to require that of every pilot in the country. I think quite reasonably there are going to be pilots who will spend their entire career behind conventional round gauge type in. I think it's good experience that all pilots should seek out. I just don't think it's going to be something that every pilot is going to want to do and that the FAA is going to want to require.
Well, it'll only be a matter of a few years before 20-year-old used Cirruses with G1000s or Avidyne start showing up on the flight lines as the beaters at flight schools.
Well, I did fly the Ford Trimotor 1929 this past year, and it did have a GPS mounted. So, it's true. Even the old DC-3s are starting to have some type of supplemental equipment in there. But I got to tell you, every once in a blue moon, when I fly one of these older low to the earth kind of aircraft, it's kind of nice not to have any of that stuff in there as well. So I like to think that we'll have an aviation program in this country that's broad-minded enough to allow people to continue to fly the fun old airplanes if they choose not to get into the fun new airplanes.
If you look at the data that the NTSB looked at in this study, which was for aircraft manufactured between 2002 and 2006, the fatal accident rate was like half what it is for the GA fleet as a whole, which includes airplanes going back obviously 100 years. Is it likely, do you think, that the insurance companies will look at this at some point and say, we will give you a discount that over a few years is going to pay for your training if you will get this training?
Right now, I have a lot of people that come to me because their insurance carriers are mandating that they get training from someone who's been factory trained in their Cirrus or their Cessna or whatever it happens to be. And yeah, you're right. I'm not sure that insurance companies have zeroed in on the fact that this study showed, though the NTSB didn't refer to it, it showed that these new airplanes had a total accident rate of about 3.7 per 100,000 hours, whereas according to the NAAL report, if you take the entire GA fleet, which would be mostly older aircraft, it was 6.47 accidents per 100,000 hours. So yeah, if nothing else, new airplanes are definitely safer, regardless of whether they have glass or not.
Well, Max, here's the chance to get in the plug. If someone wants more information on what Max Trescott has available for training for glass equipment, where should they go and what should they look for?
That's great. Well, I would say the easiest thing to do is to go to either maxtrescott.com or g1000book.com. In addition to the books and CDs and other training materials that we sell for all kinds of glass cockpits like the G1000 and the Perspective and the Avidyne, we've got great resources here in the San Francisco Bay Area. We now, and I haven't told you this before, Paul, but we actually have three G1000 type simulators available at the same airport here. I mean, most metro areas, if they're lucky, have one. We now have three to choose from. So anybody who wants to jump in the simulator and get really proficient, come on out to sunny California.
All right. Well, listen, it's been, if nothing else, it's a great topic that will result in future opportunities for us to talk. And we'll catch you again another time.
Well, and it's all fun stuff. And the NTSB did great work. So, yeah, it's been fun talking about it.
Max Trescott is the 2008 National Instructor of the Year. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.